One thing that we usually remember about the story of Rip Van Winkle is that he slept 20 years. But there is another point in that story which is almost always completely overlooked. It is the sign on the inn of the little town on the Hudson from which Rip Van Winkle went up into the mountains for his long sleep. When he went up, the sign had a picture of King George III of England. When he came down, the sign had a picture of George Washington, the first president of the United States. When Rip Van Winkle looked up at the picture of George Washington, he was amazed. He was completely lost. He knew not who he was. This incident reveals to us that the most striking thing about the story of Rip Van Winkle is not merely that he slept 20 years, but that he slept through a revolution. One of the great misfortunes of history is that all too many individuals and institutions find themselves in a great period of change and yet fail to achieve the new attitudes and outlooks that the new situation demands. There is nothing more tragic than to sleep through a revolution. And there can be no gainsaying of the fact that a social revolution is taking place in our world today. We see it in other nations in the demise of colonialism. We see it in our own nation, in the struggle against racial segregation and discrimination. And as we notice this struggle, we are aware of the fact that a social revolution is taking place in our midst. Victor Hugo once said that there is nothing more powerful in all the world than an idea whose time has come. The idea whose time has come today is the idea of freedom and human dignity. And so, all over the world, we see something of a freedom explosion. And this reveals to us that we are in the midst of revolutionary times. An older order is passing away, and a new order is coming into being.
Dear Dr. King, when you spoke at the UUA's General Assembly in Hollywood, Florida in 1966, when you spoke those words, you could never, ever have imagined what it looks like 51 years later here in your America. We are poised on the brink of another revolution. Another period of social change where our nation stands struggling. Black people are still dying in the streets, Dr. King. And we don't know what to do about that because this time the revolution is televised. It's on the internet and it's on the radio and it's on the World Wide Web. And we see it happening in front of our faces. And we still don't know what to do. Black people are dying, killed by police officers. They're killed by other black people, angry and dismayed over their lot in life. They're killed by vigilantes, frightened of black skin. Black women are arrested for failing to signal and they die in jail. Black boys die playing with toy guns. But Dr. King, the time has indeed come and we are not asleep. Dear Dr. King, you spoke from the depths of a Christianity which called you not to liberalism, but to liberation. And those words still call to us today. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called by a voice which will not let us discard your dream, a voice which speaks as loudly and as surely as a burning bush. We are called to liberation. There was a march in Washington just last week, led by activists of all colors, gay people and straight people together, all wreathed in anger and pain at the incoming administration's remarks about Muslims and minority groups, women and Mexicans. And 2,000 people gathered in the National Mall and stood at your memorial, Dr. King. They stood at the King Memorial, only 2 miles from where an inauguration will happen in under a week. And Cornell William Brooks, the president and the chief executive of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, he spoke to those marchers. And he said at last, "We will march until hell freezes over. And when it does, we will march on ice. As long as one person remains a slave to a system built on racism and colonialism and oppression, Republican and Democrat, all alike, we are called to march for our beliefs, not our political party. And we will march until hell freezes over, and then we will march on ice. We will march for liberation. We will march for equality. We will work for justice. And we will march for saving grace for every human being." Would you please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing one of Dr. King's favorite hymns, number 205, Amazing Grace.
Through our scientific genius, we have made of this world a neighborhood. And now, through our moral and ethical commitment, we must make it a brotherhood. We must live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. This is a fact of life. No individual can live alone. No nation can live alone. All I'm saying is this, that all life is interrelated, and somehow we are all tied together. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of all reality. John Donne caught it years ago and placed it in graphic terms. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. He goes on to say, any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in all mankind. Therefore, send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. This realization is absolutely necessary if we are to remain awake in this revolution.
Dear Dr. King, we're trying. We've been trying for 51 years to learn the simple art of loving our neighbor as ourselves and respecting the worth of all human persons. And we still don't have it right all the time, but we are trying. It's hard for us to see that when 50 people are packed together at one end of a tiny boat, they will fight and kill one another for breathing room. And even though we are the ones who force them there and we are the ones who keep them there, it's hard for us to see that we can set them free. We struggle to realize that if their end of the boat sinks, our end will too, because it's all one boat. But we keep trying. We will not go back to sleep. We keep trying because slavery for one is slavery for all, and we know that we are not islands. And we are called by the demands of our faith to work for freedom. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing number 156, O Freedom.
Today's arguments are generally placed on subtle cultural grounds. For instance, The Negro is not culturally ready for integration. If you integrate the schools and other areas of life, this will put the race back a generation. And another, the Negro is a criminal. You see, he has the highest crime rate in any city. So the arguments go ad infinitum. Those who use these arguments never say that if there are lagging standards in the Negro community, and there certainly are, they lag because of segregation and discrimination. They never go on to say that criminal responses are environmental and not racial. Poverty, ignorance, economic deprivation, social isolation breed crime in any racial group. It is a torturous logic to use the tragic results of segregation as an argument for the continuation of it. It is necessary to go to the causal root to deal with the problem. So it is necessary for the church, through all of its channels of education and through all of its work, to guide the popular mind and rid the community of the notion of superior and inferior races. We've all seen enough to refute the idea. We've seen Negroes who have been inspiring examples of ability to rise above the shackles of difficult environment. Skin may differ, but affection dwells in black and white the same. If I were so tall as to reach the pole or to grasp the ocean at a span, I must still be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man.
Dear Dr. King, the dream is alive and well today in the hands of Unitarian Universalists across the country. It is alive in the hands of Black Lives Matter activists and in peaceful high school students who refuse to learn to hate. It is alive in some politicians and in some college students and in young people growing up in the inner cities. The dream remains. The dream Dr. King saw is alive in each of us who answers the call of our faith and stands up for liberation. It is alive in each person who refuses to go back to sleep. It is alive in each one of us who says it isn't business as usual anymore. We have to learn a better way. We are entering a time when the call to bravery and resilience, to resistance and solidarity is everywhere. We must stand behind our brothers and sisters in love and in trust. And we must trust that together, only together, can we find our way home. Because that dream is only there if we keep dreaming. If we keep walking together. If we keep marching. And I will say to you now, as long as one person remains a slave in a system built on racism, colonialism, and oppression, you, yes, you, every one of you, are called to march. And in the words of Brooks, we will march until hell freezes over, and then we will march on ice. Amen.